On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, I like Bill King quite a bit. He's going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He ran for mayor of Houston. He's actually the co-chair of something called the Forward Party of Texas. And I believe the way that I hooked up with Bill the first time is I saw an editorial that was in the Wall Street Journal or somewhere like that, where he was trying to talk about, you know, doing things in a different way between the two political parties. He has written a book called Unapologetically Moderate. So I've had him on from time to time talking about a bunch of issues. He's pretty fired up and incensed and revolted by the hyper-partisanship that is, you know, affecting the tragedy down in Texas before we even have recovered all the bodies of the, you know, the kids and the other people who were lost. So I know he's worked up on that. He also, after Hurricane Rita in Houston, the governor of Texas appointed him, I'm not sure who that was at the time, but he was the chair of a commission on what happened and what could be avoided in the future. And Bill will be the first person to tell you that it's different hydrology related to the flash flooding, but the process of investigating and implementing the changes will be similar. And he's going to join us at 5:30. Before that, after my next guest, and I'll introduce him here in a second, I do have some just amazing, stunning, very, very sad audio to share from Texas that I haven't gotten to here this afternoon. So, you know, I had a guest on in the last hour. His name was Don Lynch. He used to be one of my bosses. He lives down in Kerrville down there in Kirk County. And he reached out yesterday in a surprising way because I had forgotten what part of Texas he lived in. I knew he was down there. He had relocated down there, actually relocated many, many decades ago, moved back to take care of his dad. I used to hunt on his dad's property in Howard County, Missouri. And then he and his wife moved back. So he sends a group text out yesterday with information about the flood. And I didn't even know whether to press go on it because it was just a unique text. I didn't know who it was from. Then I figured it out. And he shared a video from a guy by the name of Jonathan Petromala. I might not even be pronouncing his name right. Independent journalist who really, I think, has done one of the best jobs of explaining what happened and covering some of the devastation. Now, obviously, he's on a YouTube channel, and some of this is visual, but I do have some audio from his reporting that I'll share here in the next segment before we get Bill King on. Right now, former senator from Missouri, Jim Talent, is with us this afternoon. Always great on a bunch of different issues. Hi, Jim. How are you this afternoon?
I'm fine, Mark. That's good work you're doing. I learned about the power of water in my first year in the Congress. We had the big 1993 flood, and basically West St. Louis County, west of Clarkson Road, was underwater, and that was all my new congressional district. And these smaller rivers, they can flash flood so easily. The Merrimack was always the one that worried me, and of course it does. Even today,
and
local
it should,
rain,
and it should, right? Yeah,
yeah. Local rains will do that too. So the big rivers like Missouri and Mississippi, it's rain upstream. You got to worry about, and at least usually have more warning. But the smaller rivers, you know, you get a heavy rain locally, and they can go. And it's just a tragedy. It's just anybody who's ever seen that, much less been through it, just knows how terrible it is.
Well, the harrowing story, I mean, it's one thing when these things happen, and maybe we shouldn't react different emotionally when kids are involved, but when kids are involved in some of the stories that we're hearing, you know, hanging on mattresses for hours and hours floating just to be saved, it's miraculous that maybe more people didn't die because of the heroics of some of these even young people.
Yeah, you got a lot of local heroes. I mean, that's the encouraging thing about this. And your friend is right, too. I mean, while the disaster is going on and you're trying to save people, leaders really have to try and keep politics, much less partisanship, you know, out of it. Yeah. Nobody really wants to hear that. And it's pretty bad when people immediately engage in it. So, of course, you can't stop what's said on the Internet, but the leaders can avoid it.
Yeah, you would think that some of them would back off, but we'll talk about that with Bill King. Well, let me start here, Jim, with the big, beautiful bill, because when you were in Congress and when you were in the Senate, I think things were handled a little differently with these spending bills. We got away from that. This was one of those things where I said, and I knew the complaints from even Elon Musk, who's still going at it with President Trump, about the fiscal sanity of a bill like this. I certainly have great appreciation for Senator Paul's stand, Senator Johnson, and some of the others, but the practicality of it, unfortunately, and Ann Wagner was on with me a couple hours ago, is that something needed to be passed. Now, I don't know what your thoughts here on how big these omnibus bills get, because they get crazy. I don't even know how a member of Congress or a member of the Senate could even understand everything that's in these bills. But you had a week ago a situation where we didn't even know if it was going to pass the Senate. It does on a tie broke. It goes a tie vote, rather. It goes back to the House. I think I predicted at the time they would not get it to the president's desk by Friday. I'm often wrong, Jim, about my predictions. If you want gambling advice, I could give it to you and you go exactly opposite. You're going to be a winner and win some money. But they managed to get it to the president's desk. It's signed. They're taking a bit of a victory lap, but should they be?
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, I would have voted for the bill without any problem. And I'll put my answer in a couple of different buckets. First of all, I greatly, you mentioned people couldn't really know what was in it. Well, actually, one of the reasons it passed is that the leadership, Johnson and Thune, and then of the two primary committees, Jason Smith, a Missourian, and Crapo, handled this in a really transparent and respectful fashion. They went through all the process you need to go through. They consulted with everybody. They were honest brokers. They weren't pushing their own policies. They were just trying to get something that represented the views of the Republican conference, because the Democrats were never going to be a part of this, you know. So, and I think it's one of the reasons it passed. I think it's one of the reasons the waivers went with it, because they understood that the leaders had really done the best they could in good faith. Now, on the deficit reduction, I'm pleased about this bill from that standpoint. First of all, there is some real reform in the bill, particularly in Medicaid. I'm a big supporter of work requirements. I'm glad that they said illegal immigrants can't get Medicaid. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could go on about that if you want. And the second thing is that the relatively small group of members who pushed for this consistently, which would include Chip Roy in the House and Ron Johnson in the Senate, did a really good job of raising the visibility of the issue and laid the basis for more progress in this on this later in the year and then throughout. And that's how you get this kind of thing done. I mean, They made a lot of progress, and they got some deficit reduction in it. So this is a step forward for that issue. If they had sunk this bill because it didn't get enough along those lines, I'm not sure they could have passed a tax bill between now and when these tax provisions expired. And if we'd hit the country with a multi-trillion-dollar tax increase,
that would have been devastating.
And the economy, right. Yeah, the economy goes, not to mention, I mean, what happens to real people, but the economy goes in the tank. And if that happens, you know what happens to the debt? Because your revenue collection goes way off. So this was something from every perspective that had to happen. No, it wasn't perfect. I didn't like the last minute maneuvering, which they had to engage in the Senate. Although what Lisa Murkowski insisted on was not terrible.
Yeah, explain that a little bit, because she was one of the holdouts from Alaska, and they gave her something in return for concern. She had some of the same concerns that Senator Hawley did about rural hospitals, right?
Yes. She got a rural hospital fund, and the rural hospital is in a different position, and I'm not an expert on what exactly she got, but they're in a different position than the urban hospitals, which is, and I don't want to go after my friends in the urban hospitals, but I think that whole system's a big part of the problem. I think they need transparency. I mean, what other place, you know, do you go to get a service and you have no idea how much it costs and even they can't explain it to you? Now, the rural hospitals are serving an underserved population. They're really important in terms of the health in these communities. So you can't measure them by the same standard of efficiency. And that's where Murkowski was coming from and where Senator Hawley's coming from. And I think that's very understandable. But they had to get Lisa. I served with Senator Murkowski and know her pretty well, because Tom Tillis, in other words, it can get down to maneuvering. I'm sure Senator Thune thought he was at the end of the day going to get Senator Tillis. And then because of the flap and Tillis leaving, and then he decided to vote no. So now they got to get another vote. And they work with Murkowski and they got her. And, you know, laws, it's not always pretty how they're made. But I think this is a good measure, and I think not passing it would have been a disaster, Mark. Just a disaster.
What was the deal with Tom Tillis, though? Because he announces he's not running for re-election, but why was he so staunchly a holdout on that?
Well, I think you're going to have to ask Senator Tillis. It would not shock me if there were not some feelings ruffled here, okay? And I used to say all the time, I still do when I talk to groups, you can't make senators vote the way you want them to vote or the way you think they should vote. You can't. Okay. Remember when McCain walked down on the floor and decided to kill the Obamacare replacement bill? Remember that a few years ago?
Yeah.
That was just John deciding to do that. And, you know, it happens. And it's really, again, a testimony to the congressional leadership and to the president that they were able to put Humpty Dumpty back together again at the last minute on the Senate floor. There's some other really outstanding things in the bill. And again, Anne is a Congresswoman Wagner, much more expert on this. But, you know, the $113 billion for defense readiness, the money for the Coast Guard, we're actually going to get some icebreakers now, which we desperately need. And then, of course, the border enforcement money and building the wall, which is essential if we're going to get this immigration situation cleared up. So there's a lot of good things in the bill. And they really did, I think, make progress on deficit reduction. So they got some commitments to we're going to see a rescissions bill. So, yeah, this group that did such yeoman work here, I mean, Congressman Roy and Senator Johnson and others, they need to follow up. They have to keep at it. But I think we've taken a step forward on that issue as well.
Former United States Senator Jim Talent is with us. Let me take you to international stuff. We haven't even spoken since really there were three amazing.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Using military operations, the drone strike that happened with Ukraine and Russia, the Israel attack on Iran, and then, of course, RB-2s from Whiteman Air Force Base here in St. Louis, you know, dropping those bunker busters on Iran. So let me start with that. The president claims that we obliterated the nuclear program. There are questions raised by the media, and this happened in the immediate aftermath of that bombing, saying, wait a second, no, we haven't. I've heard a range from, hey, this may have put them behind by 2 years to, 5 years to 30 years. So what are your thoughts on that? And how do we really know how much we took out of the nuclear capability of Iran?
Yeah, the program as a program is effectively, and that modifier is important, I think is effectively dead. Okay. It buried under the rubble of Fordow. And they can't get at their centrifuges. They can't. It's not really a program anymore. Now, two things. It is possible that they have secreted away some enriched uranium. It is possible to turn it into a crude kind of nuclear device or use it as a dirty bomb. Just blow it up. That's not a nuclear explosion. That's just spreading, radioactive material everywhere, which is bad enough. Okay. They can try to do that. But the reason I say I think the program is effectively destroyed is that now all we really have to do, and the Israelis will do this, is police them. First of all, I'm not so sure that, at least for a while, that they're going to try to do that. They know what's going to happen to them if they do. The Iranians are focused right now on regime survival. They've turned inward. They're arresting huge numbers of people, going after minorities that they suspect of, subversion. And then they're all within the power structure trying to maneuver. I think they're not going to overthrow Khomeini. I doubt that. But I think they're maneuvering for what's going to happen when he's gone. And we could very well end up with an Iran that turns completely inward, which would not be good for Iranians because it'll be the, bad rulers, but it'll be better for the region. So the threat has gone from being one of the two biggest threats in the world, the other being the balloon going up over Taiwan, to being a tertiary threat. We have to watch it and we have to police it. But it's no longer a restraint on progress in the region. It's a tremendous victory of the force of arms, really, Israeli and American arms.
So let me take you to Israel here. And we've always talked about, people have talked about the two-state solution for Israel and the Palestinians. That doesn't seem very likely. But it's my understanding there was a piece that was in the Wall Street Journal a couple of days ago by the guy by the name of Elliot Kaufman, who's on the editorial board, that said maybe there is a door that's opening to a new way of achieving peace, because we have people who are described as the sheikhs of Hebron, which is a city in Palestine, that are open to joining the Abraham Accords. So can you explain any of this? One thing that I know after decades of covering the news, when I hear about a ceasefire, the one thing I know about a ceasefire is they always end, and then there's not a ceasefire. But are we perhaps getting closer to some sort of an agreement between Israel and Palestine, and what kind of shape would that take?
Yeah, I think we are getting closer. So a couple of things on this. First of all, there's the broader issue, which President Trump clearly has in mind, and I think Netanyahu does also, of having broken Iranian power, now building a new equilibrium, if you will, in the region writ large. Okay, and that would be Israel and then the Sunni states, the conservative but not radical Sunni states, which is Egypt, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Abu Dhabi, the Gulf states. And so it would be that informal coalition that would dominate the region, coordinated, if you will, or managed and supported by the United States and with Israeli power there to police the radicals. I mean, the Israelis have emerged as the hegemons of the Middle East. In other words, they can dominate their strategic environment. So that's Netanyahu and Trump are going to be talking a lot about that. Now, the issue with Gaza and the Palestinians is a subset of that. It's an irritant is the wrong word. I don't know what I'm saying. It's an obstacle to that broader coalition because it's much harder for the Arab states to join just as a political and domestic matter while the Palestinian issue is hanging fire. But that's going to be easier to solve, too, because it was always possible to come up with a solution, except that you had the radicals and for the last 25 years dominated by Iran using that issue basically as to weaponize conflict in the Middle East. So, as I said, Iranian power is broken. Hamas has been effectively destroyed. They don't have access to the aid anymore, so they can't steal
here.
It and sell
yeah.
it. Yeah. And then the question is, and I won't go on forever. The question is, who can we get who can govern in Gaza? And the sheikhs you talked about are in Hebron, which is in the West Bank. But who can we get that can govern in Gaza, maybe backed up by the Israelis, but, you know, a separate entity, because the Israelis don't want to do it. And we'll see what emerges as Hamas, as they hunt down more and more Hamas fighters.
I think we're learning, though. I mean, a lot of people, obviously, I probably underestimated in the past, a lot of people have underestimated President Trump on some of these fronts, and it looks like things are heading in a very interesting direction. We'll see if we can get a more permanent solution. Jim, it's always great to catch up with you. I hope everything's well.
Thank you, Mark. Right. You have a great rest of the day.
Take care. Appreciate it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
On my podcast, Aspire with Emma Greed, we share the keys to succeed in business and in life. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed and Odyssey Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.